Okay, so I've really benefited from having my colleagues, Rachel and Alexis, do the hard work of describing a couple of the projects that we're going to talk about. But what I'd like to do is take it up to another level, which is to look at how do we view these disasters? You heard about two of them, but how do we begin thinking about these in broader sense and at the aggregate as acute collective stressors and what their impacts are on populations? How do we begin to generalize from these disasters? So I have no financial relationships to disclose. So let's begin with the landscape of disasters over the last 15 years. And now the two that are very much in our minds, perhaps because we've done the large studies that you heard, but which are also pretty, they resonate a lot with the population, is Katrina and Sandy, two significant hurricanes, but they were not the only two disasters to have affected us, obviously, in this past 10 to 15 years. So a variety of disasters have really, you almost feel like there's a building momentum, either they're increasing or we're just paying more attention to them. Everything from the World Trade Center onto the anthrax attacks. We had a couple of pandemics with novel viruses between SARS and H1N1, the Haitian earthquake. There are many that I haven't listed here. These are some that have sort of risen to the top of our radar screens, perhaps. The BP oil spill, the Tohoku and Fukushima disaster in Japan, and then recently the Ebola outbreak. So we have all of these distinct disasters. And after each one of them, we often feel that there is some major lesson learned. And so you can almost look at each one and say, okay, for each thing, we've picked something up. So with Katrina at the top here, you heard from Alexis talking about enduring health problems. She was talking about the housing instability and the fact that, you know, some of the work that we've done shows that there are definite, and we and many other researchers, that there is a long-term effect of a disaster like that, long-term health effects. When we looked at Ebola, for example, we see and learn about how critical the cultural practices around burial, for example, were when it came to looking at disease transmission. When we begin to study Sandy, some of the things that emerge may be around health system coordination and the lack of health system coordination and what the impacts were. So for each one of these disasters, we're learning something unique. And you can see at the bottom there a variety of sort of take-home messages that I put home from each, whether it was first responder protection from the World Trade Center, risk communication, the value of non-pharmaceutical interventions, et cetera, as we go through all of these. But the problem is when you look at all of these events as unique events, it's hard to generalize from across all of those disasters. Is there something about them that we should be learning that is common to all the disasters? There's an argument that says, well, when you get these disasters occurring, it's like a natural experiment because you have some event that is essentially exposing a population reasonably equally and that everybody is at risk. So therefore, you have some way to begin to see what stressors, what kind of an effect they have. But we know when you have this this type of approach, it's still difficult. It's difficult to get valid and reliable data that is both pre-event and post-event in order to say this is how the population changed. It's very difficult to collect this and expensive to collect the primary data. What you heard discussed before about the Gulf Coast study and the Sandy study, those are very expensive propositions to do those kinds of studies, to mobilize 20, 30, 40 interviewers and to do that over time and space. And so this makes it very difficult to try and collect the data. And then the disaster exposure itself may be selective. We'd like to, you know, when you make the assertion that it's a natural experiment, it may not be. It could be that people may be particularly vulnerable for a variety of reasons to the exposure, because they're socially vulnerable, because of environmental justice issues. There are all sorts of reasons that people may be at higher risk when an exposure occurs. So the first thing we do is we rely on serendipity to address 1A above, the fact that it's difficult to get valid and reliable pre-event and post-event data. So what some of my colleagues will do is They hope that they're in the field already collecting data from a representative population that just happens to be in the storm's path. How lucky could you get, right? That's the one thing you have to hope for. And so I have a couple of colleagues that we're working with on the Katrina at 10 study that were in just this situation. One colleague, Mark Van Landingham at Tulane, was looking at Vietnamese populations in the United States, seeing how they've sort of socialized after having come here from after the Vietnam War. Then all of a sudden Katrina hit. He already had a longitudinal cohort, so he was able to use that and capitalize on it. Our other colleagues at Harvard were running the risk study. They had just collected data from around the country on people who are entering community colleges, including a large cohort in New Orleans. Again, they had a cohort that was exposed. They already had pre-event data, completely serendipitous. The next thing we do is we'll look at secondary data sets to address 1B, which is how do you get the data to work with? And so if you can't afford to go out and do a Gulf Coast or Sandy Child and Family Health study, which can run into the millions of dollars to try and collect the data, well, then you look for secondary data sets to do that. They could be National Health Survey data sets or BRFSS or other data sets that you just happen to be able to collect, Medicaid, Medicare, etc. But the problem is you're swapping the problem of granularity for serendipity. So now it's not serendipitous because you have well-collected data, but it's hard to get granular data. You can't get down to small area analysis when you're doing these data sets that are collected, really sampling at a county level, at a state level. You can't get all the way down to see how people are literally exposed. And then the big difficulty that often emerges is how do you measure and control for the exposure that we were referring to before that says, okay, you want to know something more specifically about exposure, so you really need to talk to people often directly to get at that, to be able to control for exposure differences. And so you could have the rigorous measure, but we still have not addressed the problem of how do you generalize across disasters. And so there are three strategies that our group has adopted with this. The first one was that we tried to create a case control study using propensity score modeling, where we took our GCAF study that you heard and we compared people to the National Survey Child Health Study. We used a propensity score model to match them up as cases and controls, and then we were able to see whether there was an effect of the exposure to the disaster. The second way we've done it is by combining cohorts. And so our Katrina at 10 project, which we are embarking on now, has pooled several cohorts, the Gulf Coast cohort, the Vietnamese cohort, the Harvard risk cohort, all together. And so we're trying to leverage the power of multiple cohorts in order to see whether, we're all finding something generalizable. And the last is what I'm going to talk about for the rest of this presentation, which is taking the data that we have collected directly as primary data and trying to analyze them as a pooled study. And so we added our Katrina study, our Sandy study, and we happen to have two oil studies, oil spill studies. And so we have four data sets and three events. The four studies are the two that you've already heard about, which are the Gulf Coast Child and Family Health Study, the Sandy Child and Family Health Study, and then there are two Gulf Coast studies that we've done. One of them is called the Gulf Coast Population Impact Project. The other is WATCH, Women and Their Children's Health. This was foundation funded. This was NIEHS funded. You could see that we did face-to-face surveys with 1,400 people in four states, from Florida to Louisiana, and these are all collected at around the, well, I'll come back to that in a minute. This was collected at around the 2-year mark after the oil spill. This is a longitudinal cohort of mother-child dyads that I'm doing in collaboration with Louisiana State University in a 7-parish region in Louisiana. This is the overarching time period of all of these studies, and they represent very different populations. You heard what Alexis and Rachel reported on the Gulf Coast and the Sandy studies. So the Sandy study is representative of 1 million people living in New Jersey, the most representative of our studies. The Gulf Coast study is representative of between 80 to 100,000 people who were displaced or greatly affected. And then we have these Gulf Coast studies, which were really representative of either a very exposed population in four states or more of a representative population in the seven parishes. And so we took all this data and we put it together. So let's look and see, do they look different? And the answer is, well, they certainly do for a variety of reasons. They look different because of how we sampled them. And so when you look at this and you look at the age, and now I'm going to focus only on children, and I'm also selecting out, when I have longitudinal data, I try to harmonize this data set for the 2 to 3 year period after the event. So I selected out just those pieces of data 2 to 3 years after the disaster event, looking at those respondents with children. So now these are the sample children, and the ages differ greatly. So it's not as though we're seeing the same distribution of ages across. In part, there is a sampling issue. So in Women and Their Children's Health, we were interviewing and talking to the kids who were 10 to 17 and asking the parents about those kids as well. And similarly, in the Sandy Child and Family Health Study, we were looking at children between the ages of 5 and 18. So already, first problem is they're not the same. We know that. The second was we looked at poverty, and so we took a very gross split, and whereas Alexis and Rachel were diving down into very, you know, granular detail, I'm operating at a much higher level because we have less to work with now that is comparable across the data sets, but now we're looking at poverty, you know, in each of these cohorts. And you can see this varies tremendously. So in the Gulf Coast study, 60% of the people we were talking to were living in poverty. In the Gulf Coast studies for the oil spill that are more population-based, it's between 20 and 25% are living in poverty. And in the highly resourced area in New Jersey, only 10% are living in poverty. So again, these are vastly different cohorts. And still, we're going to try and put them all together to get at the answer here. And so we asked parents to say, we said, since the event, has the child been sad or depressed, felt nervous or afraid, had problems sleeping, or had problems getting along with others? And you could think of these two as being internalizing problems and these two being the externalizing issues, the problems getting along with others and sleeping. And you could see that there are different responses here. So the Gulf Coast study, and these are all taken at the same time after the event. So I'm just giving you a snapshot, even though you know now that the composition of children look different. This is the unadjusted look at it. So you would say, all right, well, you could see differences that the Gulf Coast study and the Sandy study, kind of similar, a little bit higher in the kids being sad or depressed, and in the oil spill studies, a little bit lower with that. The problem sleeping, again, the two hurricane studies a little bit higher, the oil spill a little bit lower. The problems getting along with others, the Katrina study was the highest, and had any of these issues at all, so looking across, in the Sandy study, kind of surprisingly, there were more that the parents were likely to report that the kids had one or more of those issues. So now let's look at exposure. And here's where it gets tricky. Now I'm trying to come up with a categorical measure to compare exposure across all of these different disasters. So we're trying to split this into a three-category frame of no or little exposure, moderate exposure, and major exposure. So the major exposure with the Gulf Coast study, as you heard from Alexis's presentation, they were all suffering from major exposure. They were displaced for at least 6 months, and as you heard it with the housing instability, sometimes for 3 or 4 years, or actually were still unstably housed even at the 5-year mark. And so they had major exposure. With the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, we had a slightly different way of looking at this. So here the major exposure was, and this was after a lot of factor analyses, et cetera, we decided, okay, if the family lost income as a result of the spill, or there was a very strong smell of the oil during the spill that was strong and persistent, those two pieces were the pieces that we elected to say are going to be a major exposure. That sense of smell turns out to be a very interesting one and pretty durable across our studies. The moderate exposure for the oil spill was that the beaches or the waterways where the people lived was affected, and or the child helped with the cleanup, there weren't a lot of kids that helped with the cleanup, or the smell of oil was moderately strong, okay? And then we gave the little or no as being the inverse of the others, that if there was no major or minor, or major or moderate, then we gave it little or none. And for Sandy, it was all based on the housing damage, whether the house was structurally damaged or destroyed was major. Moderate damage was it was uninhabitable for up to 30 days, and then the house experienced no damage or only minimally affected. So now I've set the stage for what's going to be really a very simple logistic regression, which is what relates to children's mental health distress? Does the event make a difference? Is the event itself going to explain it? Are we going to see Katrina exceptionalism because it was the biggest event? Does poverty make a difference, or does exposure make a difference? Is there a way that we can come to some generalizable conclusion? Before I get to that answer, this is the level of the disaster exposure, and you could see the GCAF 100%, and then there was variation across the other two cohorts. So now I'm getting to the drum roll, you know, does it make a difference? And so the answer is that we managed to control for the uniqueness of the events. The events themselves did not explain mental health distress. Income made a difference, and exposure made a difference. And so for those of us in the disaster world, this begins to be a very exciting proposition. This notion that we can take very different events and begin to learn something that is common to all of them about exposure, if we can come up with ways of designating that and categorizing that exposure, we might be able to see, and this is just the beginning. So this is like a proof of concept. Can you begin to put this together? We have plans to try and use much more sophisticated approaches to this using the propensity score models that we had adopted earlier to try and really equalize those data sets and to expand on the structure of our equations and our models so that they look more like what you saw Rachel and Alexis present when they were looking at the specific studies. To the extent that we can sort of really develop that, that would be the next frontier. But this is the first effort to say there is a generalizable effect of exposure related to children's mental health distress 2 to 3 years after an event. And these are the conclusions that I really just went over. And we would welcome any questions during the question and answer phase. Thank you.